all the way through school, you get rewarded for having the answer. I kind of probably carried that with me a little bit too long, even into leadership. And then I realized that me trying to have the answer was taking opportunities away from my team. My job was to give them the opportunities to have the answers.
Yeah, I love that.
Welcome back to Lead the Team with number one best-selling author and in-demand corporate trainer, Ben Fanning. On this podcast, the world's most innovative senior leaders share their top success strategies to motivate your direct reports, cultivate your top leaders, and accelerate your career. Let's get started. Here's Ben.
Real quick note, my family and I just got back from an incredible cruise with Uncruise. Now, we'd experienced what cruising was like on a big ship with thousands of people, and frankly, it just wasn't for us. But this one was completely different. It was a small boat of less than 100. We had an amazing time where we saw whales and other wildlife, inspiring nature, hiking, kayaking, and bushwhacking, which is hiking without the trails, and we received incredibly personalized service, guides who get you off the beaten path and gorgeous sunsets. Everything was so easy and with no lines. They provided incredible meals, including sustainable seafood, not to mention a list of impressive cocktails. My wife, daughter, and I loved it. When we returned, I asked Uncruise to become a show sponsor, and I was excited when they agreed. Right now, they're offering special deals on cruises in Baja, Mexico, and Alaska that includes the incredible luxury, service, and adventure that we experience. To learn more, go to benleads.com/cruise. That's benleads.com/cruise for the latest deals.
Hey there, Lead the Team. Welcome back to another great episode. Today I have for you Connor Bagnell, who is president of MHK, which is focused on simplifying healthcare for health insurance companies through technology. They manage tens of millions of lives through some of the most prominent players in healthcare, including four of the top five and seven of the top 10 health plans in the U.S. Now, back to Connor. He started his career as an electrical engineer, and over the last 20 years has evolved his career with a deep focus on innovation in healthcare. Connor, welcome to Lead the Team.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And as y'all listen, let's start this thing out by talking about his awesome accent, because he hails from Ireland, Cork, Ireland. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
What do you think people need to know about Ireland that maybe they don't, or maybe about Cork specifically?
Cork is a cool town. It's a very much a college town. There's some big universities there, a lot of really good restaurants, bars, live music. It's a fun place to visit.
And how far is Cork from Dublin?
So it's about 130 miles. Right. So when I was very young, it was a 5-hour drive. Now it's maybe 2.5 hours. The roads are much better these days than they used to be.
Oh, man. Well, there you go. And when did you move from Ireland to the U.S.?
Yeah, so I did my undergrad in Ireland, did a bachelor's in electrical engineering. And basically, as soon as I graduated, moved to the U.S. So that was back in 1997. So I'm dating myself a little bit now.
Oh, fantastic. All right. And before we move on to other leadership-y type topics, for those of you that can see and those of you that can't, he's got a cool Andy Warhol on the wall here representing something. Tell us more about that and why you have it in your office.
Yeah, it's actually an album cover. So music was always very important for me. And I love Velvet Underground, especially back in the days when they had John Cale, and the Banana album is the one which they did with Nico. So great album.
So good. And so let's dive on that a little bit. Music and being an executive, what is the intersection and how important is to you as a leader?
Yeah, music is hugely important. When you listen to music, it really impacts your well-being, right? Relaxing music can help you relax. Upbeat music helps you get up a little bit. And one of the things I like to do is walk every morning before I start my day. And one of the things I've done is I've created a 136 beats per minute playlist that sort of gets good energy as I finish my walk and sort of come into the day relaxed and ready to go.
So you're specifically choosing that beats per minute. Why?
Yeah. It's just over time, I've got a couple of playlists. I have a chill one that I like to listen to in the evening, sort of unwinding. And I found that some of the music that really sort of gets me in the right groove was kind of that tempo. And so I started to do a little bit of research, and I'm like, okay, there's plenty of good songs with that tempo. So created a playlist from that.
Wow. Well, I listen to a lot of music too. Big, love live music, love recorded music, love all kinds of music. And I've never thought about that from a beats per minute perspective. So you did a research, like, of all the songs I'm liking to get ready for my day, they had this beat. Do you use a tool for that? You just researched it? Like, where are they, proven in the Harvard Business Journal somewhere? Or?
Yeah, you can. There's websites. You just Google the tempo that you want, and it'll give you all the songs that are sort of at that tempo.
Wow.
It's pretty easy.
And so are you able to listen to music with words while you work?
No. And actually, I'm a big Andrew Huberman podcast fan, and he did a whole session on music. And the evidence, he says, suggests music just before you work or music just after you work helps a lot. Music while you work, maybe not as much.
Got it.
I typically don't listen to music when I'm working.
Yeah, my wife falls into that boat too, where she's like, I'll listen to music, but it's got to be no words. For me, for some reason, it does not seem to distract me. So I have it going on, it seems like, all the time. But I do, kind of depending on the mood. But I like the idea of using it as an intentional mood shifter or uplifter or energizer. And you gave us some great thoughts on that from a BPM. So there you go, y'all. Beats per minute. Take a look. So let's dig into your background a little bit more here. Connor, what's been your biggest epiphany in your career about leadership?
Yeah, if I go back several years ago, I think I was responsible for a team that was cross-functional, very, very strong team, like just amazing people on the team. Everybody's skills really complemented each other well. There wasn't really any problems that I thought we couldn't solve as a team. It was just such a strong team. And as we were working, there was maybe something not quite as optimal as it should have been. And as I dug into it, what I realized was the team was sort of hungry for a little bit more discipline and concreteness around the strategic plan. And so I took that as, okay, I'm the leader. Let me go away and figure it out, and I'll come back to the team. And I think I spent a weekend putting something together, and I brought it back to the team. And when I shared it, the team was very nice about it. They all looked at it and sort of said, okay, thank you. And I got the sense that this wasn't quite what they were looking for. And I think through the conversation, I got to the point where I basically said, look, you guys, you know what you want. Why don't you go do it? And then they went away and they did several weeks, maybe even a month of work to come back with plan. And it completely blew me away, right? They just did an amazing job. And reflecting on it, I think I realized that all the way through school, and I went to Catholic school, Christian Brothers in Ireland, you get rewarded for having the answer. And in work, when you come in as an entry-level person, you're there to figure out and have the answers. And I kind of probably carried that with me a little bit too long, even into leadership. And then I realized that me trying to have the answer was taking opportunities away from my team, right? My job was to give them the opportunities to have the answers and not be the one that brings it. And so since then, I've tried really hard, sometimes successfully, sometimes not so successfully, not to be the one giving the answers, but have the team figure it out. And that's served me pretty well since.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so true. Like, you get promoted for having the answers because you know the space you're in. Maybe you get things done. You're looked to as an expert. And then as you move up, that becomes a massive limitation.
Yeah.
And I love how it sort of like, I guess your hand was forced to make that change because you're like, I worked like crazy on this for you guys. And you say it's not good enough. And then you walk away, they blow you away.
At the time, as a sort of, you feel bad, right? You feel like, oh man, I didn't nail it. And that was the best thing that could have happened.
A true wake up call.
Yeah, a true wake up call.
You know, moving on, you know, when I look at your background, I'm like, man, electrical engineer to healthcare. Those two seem pretty far apart. And, you know, Ireland to the U.S., you know, you're talking about you crossed an ocean, you crossed multiple professions, and now here you are as a healthcare president. What's been that journey in a nutshell, and what'd you learn along the way?
Yeah, it's one of these things where every situation, you make the best decision you can, and the collection of all those decisions bring you to where you are. So I probably in 2005 ended up with a company very focused on healthcare. I was a software engineer, didn't really know much. As we were building solutions, though, I had a hunger for understanding who the users were that we were building the solutions for. And so as I progressed in my career, I spent more time thinking about the users. And for our solutions, the users were clinicians, nurses, doctors, therapists, etc. And that was just so cool because you get into healthcare. Most people who are in healthcare are very mission driven. They become clinicians because they want to help someone. And so when you work with people like that, you can't help but be affected by it in a positive way. And so that was sort of the progression. Lots of focus on who the users were, building solutions for them. And I've been lucky enough to have some really good opportunities to work with great people building great solutions. So yeah, it's been fun.
So you started out on the technical side and then you're like, wait a minute, I'm more interested in the users and their bigger problem than just the technical aspects of it.
Well, yeah. So if you're in a situation where you're building a solution for someone and maybe the business idea isn't quite right, or the requirements for the users aren't quite right, it doesn't matter how perfect your engineering skills are, you're not going to get it right. And so I had some opportunities to learn on things that didn't quite work out as well. And my learning was I needed to get further left in the process, right? Get closer to what are the ideas, what are the problems we're trying to solve? How important are those problems? What are the challenges to solve it? Not just from the technology perspective, but from a people and process perspective too. Yeah.
Well, you said sometimes, or a couple of times, things didn't work out quite right. Do you have a favorite failure that ultimately led to your success or growth on down the road?
I've had plenty of them. I would say the one that stuck out the most and probably put me on the path towards more product management and sort of being earlier in the process was when we were working on a set of capabilities for nurses, and the requirements that sort of came in from the business side, which would have been our product management back in the day, were just focused on the technical aspects of you have to have these fields. These fields are important to these decisions, but no information about the context. And so you build a solution that when the users see it, they're like, what the hell is this? And so that's a terrible feeling when it happens, but it's really important, right? Because if the users don't take to it, it's never going to work.
Yeah. So you presented them a Frankenstein and it scared them.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So you want to design with their daily life very much in mind. And that now I think people would call that user-centered design. And that's a big part of what we're doing now here.
Are you looking to increase sales, grow your brand, and share your leadership message? Then check out our business podcast program. Each week, more people listen to podcasts than have Netflix accounts, and one-third of the U.S. population listens to podcasts regularly. So your customers and team are already listening to podcasts. It should be yours. Discover our 5-step profitable podcast framework and what results you can expect for your company by setting up a 20-minute call with my team at benleads.com/schedule. That's benleads.com/schedule.
All right, so let me throw this one at you. What about the old Henry Ford quote? Where, and I'm going to mess it up a little bit, right? Maybe you can correct me. Like, do you know the quote I'm going to ask you about? What was it?
If I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse.
Okay, yes. And so that's sort of the other side of this. So how are you thinking about Henry Ford and you're thinking about your end customer and being ahead of the game?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways you can go with that one. A lot of times customers will come and they'll say, I need this button, I need this field, I need some piece to the workflow. And a lot of times, if you ask why, and we talk about asking why five times, you can get back to the problem you're really trying to solve is this, right? And so you can end up going down the wrong path. If someone asks for a specific set of capabilities, you can build something really complicated. And actually, probably the story about this that I like the best is NASA during the space race, we're trying to figure out how do you solve the problem of writing in zero gravity. And so they created this initiative where they spent tens of millions of dollars working on a pen that could write in space. Because without gravity, a ballpoint pen won't work. And years later in some, they got to meet their counterparts from the cosmonaut program. And they showed them their space pen and they talked about the tens of millions of dollars that they spent solving the problem. And then one of the Russians turned around and said, well, we use pencils. And so sometimes pretty low fidelity, low tech can work just as well or better.
That stings.
Yeah, yeah. So we try not to build space pens and focus on get the pencils first.
You mentioned the five whys. For our listeners, what does the five whys mean to you? And how often do you tap into that as a leader?
I think it's, well, so when you're building solutions, it's really important because someone may think this is the answer we want and you ask why, and they probably have a pretty good rationale on why they got to that conclusion. And then you ask why again, and you sort of walk back to some of the fundamental assumptions that maybe they glossed over a little bit too quickly. And then you can walk it back to what's the real core problem that you're trying to solve, right? Not the solution you're trying to build, but the problem you're trying to solve. And as a leader, that's very helpful as well, right? As a human, you have emotions, and sometimes the emotions, you'll build a rationalization around that to explain to yourself and to others what those emotions are causing. Sometimes just asking why to bring people back through that and sort of get to the root facts, the root sort of the truth of the situation can help people look at it from a different perspective as well. So it's a useful leadership tool too.
Yeah, I'm really glad you broke that down like that, because I think people need to hear it. Maybe they're familiar with it. It's a Six Sigma principle. It's been around a long time. And I knew about it for a while. And when I was working inside of a large organization, I was going through leadership training. And finally, someone's like, okay, I know y'all have heard of the five whys, but let's actually do it. And it blew my mind in terms of how powerful that was. And what I realized was literally people never ask it. Like, they may ask why, but they never say, well, let's play the five why game. I want to ask you why. Every statement you're asking why. First of all, it's a little annoying, but by that fifth why, you are completely, all the facade is stripped away, and it's just so powerful.
That's right. It can be frustrating for someone sitting through. It's like, but I told you.
I told you. Just stick with it a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
So for the listeners today, Connor has already given you the BPM, the beats per minute for your music, but man, go out and actually try this. And to keep from completely annoying your team and turning them off, tell them, hey, let's do the Six Sigma thing. Let's just try the five whys. Or do it in a staff meeting and have everybody pair up.
Yeah.
And just try it.
It works. It definitely works.
So good. All right. So you say that you love building innovative solutions and you really get passionate about growing leaders. Do you have a favorite innovation that's come from your work or a story of a specific person? You don't have to mention their name, but that you were able to develop and what was maybe unpack that a little bit for us.
Yeah. So I probably take that in two pieces. So one of the early ahas for me on innovation was when we had some customers who were maybe struggling a little bit with one part of a workflow within a solution that we were working on. Mm-hmm. And we actually went out and sat and watched the users use the system. And it was really cool because they would get a phone call from, they were in a process where they would have to work with physician offices who were requesting authorizations for services. And the first thing they would do would be write down the provider's phone number that was calling them. After observing that a few times, we sort of said, why are you doing that? It's like, well, sometimes the call drops and the field for entering that information is way down the screen. And so we just write that down. And it's such a little thing. And for a user, when you actually solve that, it makes such a big difference, right? It's like, they understand me. They understand what I'm trying to do. So that was cool.
Yeah, it's so simple. And you don't get that feedback. Like literally, you could send them a survey. You'd never hear that.
Observing. Exactly. It's something they just do outside of your application. And so you never have visibility in it unless you go out and actually sit with them and look at what they're doing. And I think for me, one of the cool things in terms of helping create environments where people can grow, I only joined MHK as president in January of last year. And I was working for one of our sister companies in Seattle, MCG. And when I was tapped on the shoulder and asked if I wanted to take this opportunity, it was a good opportunity in general. But one of the things that was just such a sweetener is my replacement was already on the team in MCG. And so he stepped up, took over, and I think in many ways will do a better job than I was ever going to do. He's a very talented person. So it was really cool to get out of his way and give him the opportunity as well.
So someone that you had helped develop took over your role and you believe that he or she will be able to take it to the next level.
Yeah,
that's got to be really, really gratifying because as you often talk about on this show, you know, your legacy is really not left through a bridge or a building with your name on it or a street. It's through your relationships and the people you touch along the way.
And
man, that's gonna be a good feeling. What's the worst leadership advice you've heard?
A long time ago, I was in a different, very different environment, and we were creating software and we never really had the resources to do as good a job as we wanted to do from a quality perspective. And the chief operating officer of the organization came in and did a town hall, and one of our team put their hands up and said, look, we're not able to spend the time we need to build a really quality solution for our customers. And her response at the time was, look, I grew up watching Westerns, and one of the things I loved in the Westerns was the bandit always had to stay one day ahead of the sheriff. So I want you guys to just stay one day ahead of the sheriff, right? Do just enough so you don't get in trouble. And for me, that was the signal of, okay, I've got to get out of this organization. This won't work.
Oh, God. Just stay one step ahead of the sheriff. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I do think maybe a lot of people would not say it that way, but that is a mindset that people bring sometimes, especially in startups where you're just kind of, you know, you're in survival mode and the company's not doing financially well. Just trying to stay one step ahead. And that's a warning sign, man.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's you can't do that. There's too much at stake. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, all right, I got a couple more questions here. Number one, I want to go back to Ireland for a second. That's a country I've not visited, but we're actually talking about it right now. We want to get over there. Love to travel. What do you think the rest of the world can learn from Irish mindset, Irish culture? What do you think?
That's an interesting one. I think the Irish people are very, very good citizens of the world. Very, very cognizant of challenges in the environment. They hate to see injustices anywhere in the world. And I think it helps a little bit that it's a smaller country. It's only like 5 million people or so. And so the politics goes a lot deeper than the politics here tends to go. So people really understand issues and take their civic responsibilities very seriously. I'm proud of my peeps.
I love it. And there's a lot more there than just St. Patrick's Day.
There's 364 other days most years.
Come on, y'all. Nuts. Yeah, I'm intrigued. We want to get ourselves over there.
I can help you with your itinerary when you
need this. Well, thank you. Yeah. I have heard that you mentioned the thing about Dublin to Cork. It's a lot faster to get there now because of the roads. But I have heard from multiple people, maybe not, like it seems like it would be the right thing to do to rent a car, but maybe it's not the right thing to do if you're visiting based on most of the roads.
The roads are better than they were. You go to some of the rural areas of the country and you'll still get those roads that look like they only fit one car, with grass growing down the middle of the road. And frequently you'll come across a car coming in the opposite direction and both cars kind of have to go into the ditch to get past. So you do have a little bit of that, but you don't have to take those roads.
All right. Encouraging message. All right. So starting to wrap this up, I'll give you a buffet that you can pick from. You can either go like a general parting thought. You can share your most colorful story of when someone quit or was fired, or three success strategies that all employees need to understand.
I think my fun story of someone trying to quit was at a previous company years ago. We had hired a new engineer, and I think I was a director or something at the time. And there was a couple of us meeting in an office, and this guy started. It was his first day. He came in. He was all enthusiastic. Maybe 2-3 hours later, we're sitting having a meeting, and it was one of the other directors that this guy was going to report to. And out the corner of our eye, we saw this guy with his backpack on running down the corridor. And I was like, was that the new guy? And so he went, one of the directors went and sort of caught up to him and said, what's going on? He's like, I can't do this. This is too hard. I won't be able to do it. And he was talked down off the ledge and actually ended up being a very good contributor on the team.
Wow.
But yeah, if we didn't see him running, he would have been gone that first day.
So he was literally his first day, he was running away from the work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
what were you guys building in there?
It was software, but I think when he was seeing the tooling and everything he had to do in terms of source control and all the pieces, I think the team just threw too much at him on day one. And he's like, oh my God, this is crazy.
So, like, man, yeah. we gotta double down and work on our onboarding process. At the first day, people are running out of the building.
yeah. No, there was some good lessons to learn from that one for sure.
Well, Connor, it's been a blast today, my friend.
Yeah, it's been fun.
What's your parting thought? We'll give you one more shot. Any other direction you want.
So I would say for anybody who has aspirations for growth, probably the most important thing is to be curious. right? Whether it's talking to customers, whether it's working with your internal teams, if something isn't quite working the way you expect it to work, dig into that. That's probably an opportunity right there.
Well, and be curious, gang. Thanks, Connor.
Would you or your CEO be a good fit for this podcast? If you know a uniquely talented leader who has a story to share and a message to deliver, then we'd love to host them on the show. Go to benleads.com/apply to fill out a quick form where you can let us know a little bit about yourself, and my team will take a look to see if we're a good fit. That's benleads.com/apply.
Ben Fanning is a number one best-selling author, Inc. magazine columnist, and CEO of the Fanning Group, an international consultancy and corporate training company. To learn how they can help your organization, go to benfanning.com.